Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's Medical Podcast. Today, for 2019, we are looking at abdominal pain. Now, abdominal pain is a diagnostically challenging presentation. The multitude of abdominal organs combined with the often changing severity and location of the pain can be quite misleading. So luckily for us, we have our friend, our colleague, Dr. Dinesh Palepana. He is a junior doctor of the year, is that correct?
That's right.
And I think we now also have to call you something like Brigadier or Captain or Sir or Knight or, like we're saying, Able Seaman, maybe?
My liege.
Maybe my liege.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe so we should give the context there. So he was awarded the Order of Australia medal.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Just recently on Australia Day.
And Junior Doctor of the Year.
Yes.
Which is brilliant.
And he's just come up a night shift. So yeah. He's...
It's always fun to be here, though. Chat with you guys.
He says. All right. We're going to start with abdominal pain, and Matt's going to begin with a case study.
First of all, why are we choosing abdominal pain today? That's a question to you, Michael.
Oh, okay. It's common? Yeah, common presentation with an ED?
Dinesh, would you say this is the number one presentation to ED?
Statistically, I'm not sure, actually, but...
Well, it is.
It's
okay.
Definitely... It's, well, thank you. It's damn common. That's for sure. Yep.
Okay, so I thought I would open up today's podcast with a typical case study of abdominal pain, and then we can start to go through all the aspects of pain and how you would assess it and so forth. So, we have a 64-year-old male presenting to ED with diffuse pain throughout the abdomen, but worsening in cycles. It seems to be worse at the lower left quadrant, and the pain also comes with distension of the abdomen and ongoing constipation. So, Dr. Dinesh, if someone was to present to you like this, what are you thinking?
I think there's a lot of useful information that's there already. So one of the things that you think about initially are just the basics. So is it a male or a female? How old are they? So a young female will have a different set of things that you're thinking about straight away.
Right.
Whereas an elderly male gentleman like this has a different things.
So does this include things like being female, you need to start thinking about reproductive organs, and obviously being male, less so?
Exactly.
Males don't have reproductive organs.
Well, they do, but there's probably going to be less pelvic pain, I'd assume, with males, statistically.
Yes, but you can still get presentations that affect them. But this is an elderly gentleman. So age also changes to things that you'll think about. So if it was a young male, you might start thinking about things like appendicitis or mesenteric adenitis and things like that. But with an elderly gentleman like this, you start to think about a few more serious things.
Mm. So would you say it becomes more serious with age?
Not always, but you have higher cause for concern.
Yeah.
Because also a lot of the time, these people tend to have other comorbidities and they may not be physiologically as robust as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So if we were to, I think maybe to give us some frame of reference, considering we're talking about the abdomen, one of the reasons it's difficult is because obviously there's a multitude of organs within the abdomen. And so if we were to break up the abdomen into the 9 abdominal areas, would you say that one of the 9 abdominal areas presents more commonly than others? Or would you say that because abdominal pain can be, at least in the first instance, quite diffuse as opposed to localized, that people just come in and go, look, I've just got this abdominal pain, it's coming and going, or maybe it's a dull aching or it's a sharp pain. This is one of the reasons why it's so difficult, right? It's so variable. Would you say it progresses from a more diffuse to a more localized more often?
Sometimes, or sometimes people just come in and say, look, I've got pain in the epigastrium. Well, they don't say epigastrium.
I was going to say, great, that's wonderful.
Yeah. It would be handy.
So just to get the anatomy there, so when you do your 9 quadrants, so the vertical lines are mid-clavicular, is that correct?
Yes.
And then your 2 horizontal, the higher one, is going through the pylorus, which is the pylorus plane, kind of where the stomach goes into the small bowel or the duodenum. Mm-hmm. And then you've got kind of the top of the hip. I think that's a transtubular plane. So that gives you the 9 quadrants.
Yeah.
And so just while we're there with the anatomy, the main kind of structures that sit in each. So with these 9 quadrants, we've got 3, 3, 3, superior, movement, superior, middle, inferior. And so the line superior is the hypochondriac with left and right, and in the middle, epigastric. And then we go down to the second 3, which is going to be in the middle, the umbilicus, which is kind of where your belly button is. Either side of that is the lumbar, left and right. And then going down to the last 3rd is the hypogastric, and either side of that is the left iliac and right iliac.
That's right.
Now, just so we know, the main organs that are located in each, we've kind of got the stomach as a majority in the left hypochondriac region. In the epigastric, we've got a bit of the liver, left lobe. What else is in the epigastric?
So the epigastrium.
A bit of duodenum.
Yep, it has the aorta running behind it.
Mm. Okay, that's a good one. Well.
Yeah,
And then you go to the right hypochondriac, which is going to be right over to the right side. Up the top is mostly the liver, gallbladder, biliary tree. Moving down to the umbilical is kind of small intestine. And then the left lumbar, now I've got to draw it myself. Left lumbar is going to be probably descending colon, maybe a spleen possibly, or is that more upper left, the left hypochondriac?
Quadrant, yeah.
The right lumbar is the ascending bowel, and then going down to the left iliac. So you got sigmoid. Would rectum kind of come in there? Not so much.
Mm,
maybe a bit of ureter.
Yep,
And then the right iliac, this is kind of cecum, appendix. And I guess on either side it would be the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, the females. And then kind of sitting in the hypogastric region would be bladder.
Yep. Suprapubic.
Suprapubic, okay. So that... got all that out of the road now. So,
that's great. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So with now presenting with a pain, so at least in this case, we've got a guy who's got diffuse pain because it's kind of all over the abdomen.
Yeah.
But it seems to be worse down the lower left area.
So could we then quickly say that you're probably going to be presented with 3 different types of pain predominantly when it comes to abdominal pain? The visceral pain, which is coming from the organ itself. The somatic pain... which is nociceptors being stimulated.
Or body wall.
Or body wall. And referred pain, which is obviously pain being localized to a part of the body where it's not necessarily originating from. Would it be fair to say that when you've got visceral pain when it comes to the abdomen, that if you've got it happening to something that's a hollow organ, for example, maybe part of the bowel, that type of pain usually comes about due to distension, and often it's due to gas and liquids for distension. And if it's to a solid organ, it's something happening with the capsule, the nociceptors, pain receptors in the capsule, which may be a fluid buildup, like blood, maybe some sort of mass, tumor, something like that potentially. And that the somatic pain most often comes from some sort of inflammation or irritation to the peritoneum itself, and maybe that's a progressive phase going from the organ that's originally been affected and then progressing to the peritoneum, and that's maybe when you start getting it more localized. Mm-hmm. And then the referred pain potentially, we're not 100% sure, has to do with the nerve fibers that are going back to the spine, sort of all coming together, different parts of the body coming together into one aspect of the spine, going to the brain, and the brain sort of mixing up where this signal is coming from.
Exactly.
Would that be fair?
Yeah, but with when you were talking about hollow viscuses or hollow organs like the bowel, so yes, when it fills up with something, it can be one, but also when it's blocked.
Okay.
So when something's blocked and when it's trying to, you know, when it's still trying to express peristalsis, you can still get that. So if you've got a kidney stone, or if you've got a gallstone.
So with this, so then would you say that the pain that you experience from this would be due to peristalsis trying to be that contraction that's happening to push something through, but because of the obstruction, it's acting in a way like it's distending over an object or around an object, and this sort of pain would be coming and going, and would be termed, is that colic?
Yeah.
That's a colicky pain?
Yeah.
So intermittent pain.
Intermittent pain.
So he kind of presented with a bit of that. He had diffuse pain, but he did have some kind of...
You want to put the microphone to your mouth?
Okay, so yeah, he had a bit of that as well. But just to add on the mechanical, so from what I've looked into, it appears that visceral pain is broken into two types, being a mechanical pain and a chemical pain. Mechanical pain, like Mike said, is usually to do with stretch, distension, contracting against an obstruction, and that's usually transmitted by the serosa, so it's the outer part of, let's say, the bowel or the organ or the mesentery, whereas the chemical pain seems to be more associated with the actual mucosa, which is the inner lining of the bowel, let's say, so the first lot of cells that would be in the intestine. So if they, let's say, get eroded from an ulcer, that could cause a type of pain compared to a distension pain, which is a blockage, which could be in the bowel itself or the organ itself or the mesentery even.
But with the bowel, would you feel, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm just making an assumption, if the bowel was lacerated, just the bowel was lacerated, do you think the patient would be experiencing pain? Or would the pain be due to the laceration, or would it be due to secondary effects from the laceration, such as fluid building up, maybe peristalsis trying to happen, but it's not happening? Because as far as I'm aware, you wouldn't feel any pain if you had some sort of laceration, and only laceration of the bowel. But I could be wrong. I don't know. And I mean, I'm sure you've never been presented with a patient who's only had a laceration of the bowel with nothing else.
You can actually perforate bowels.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yep. So you can get bowel perforations from various things.
And so do they experience abdominal pain?
They experience
significant,
pretty exquisite pain, actually.
And would it be due to the perforation, do you think?
It'd be a combination of things, because what's in there would leak out.
Yeah.
And
which would then lead to
irritation.
Yeah, exactly, which would cause irritation. But it's usually exquisitely painful.
Yeah, okay.
But and this is, I don't know, because I'm obviously not a medical doctor, but I've heard that, say, with, let's say you have an obstructed bowel, and then which would be highly painful, and then it would lead to, say, a perforated bowel, and that release of pressure might actually take the pain away, possibly?
Potentially, but you'd still be in a fair bit of pain.
Okay. So let's have a look, thinking about those nine quadrants. So is it fairly accurate that when a patient presents with a problem with one of those organs, that the pain will sit in that location, or can it be somewhere else? I know Mike spoke about referred pain.
Yeah, so you can get referred pain, exactly. So, for example, if you have something irritating your liver, or biliary colic, which is, you know, gallstones, mm-hmm. or something to do with your gallbladder, you can feel it in your scapula or shoulder sometimes. So you can get referred pain that way.
And I guess the reason for that is the diaphragm, which is sitting just above the liver, it's innervated by a nerve called the phrenic nerve, which comes from C being cervical, 3, 4, 5, which is up in your neck, which also innervates, you know, your trapezius, well, that kind of dermatome is trapezius, and some of your neck. And so, like Mike said, that nerve fiber gets mixed up. Similar to, say, some patients may have heart attack and they get arm pain. Mm-hmm. So you've got a liver which is sitting just below the diaphragm, but on the together with the diaphragm. And so if you irritate that whole region, it can go up into the shoulder. And have you got another example of a referred pain?
Let me think. My brain is not working properly.
So you've just come off a night shift.
Yep.
That's understandable.
That would probably be the, you know.
What about, like, say, kidney stone? Does that, because the kidneys are kind of in the lumbar region, do the stones?
Kidney stones by themselves, so nephrolithiasis, or just having stones sitting in your kidney, can be asymptomatic.
Right.
But when they become ureteric calculi, or when they start to go down into the ureter, that's when it can become really painful.
Right. Is it only painful because of the peristalsis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the main reasons, yeah. So classically, that kind of pain can happen. It's loin to groin, so it can... You can feel it going from, so your mid-back on one side all the way down to your groin.
Mm. Intermittent? Is that only during the colicky sort of... Is that usually quite constant for that?
Intermittent, generally, classically. But you can just have constant pain as well. Yeah. And a lot of these guys are writhing around in pain when it happens.
It's pretty painful. I've never experienced it. A colleague of ours has experienced it. A couple of people were.
My dad's at it.
And they just say it's horrendous.
But when you're talking about referred pain, actually, mm-hmm. Matt, one other example is with kids, sometimes when they come in with abdominal pain, or particularly suprapubic pain, or some of the lower quadrants, one of the things that you should generally check for is testicular torsion.
Yeah.
So there's another example.
Is that common for kids?
Torsion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not super, super common, but it's
you'd say often enough that.
Yeah. Well, it's
something you think about.
One of the things that you don't want to miss.
Yeah.
Because it has some serious consequences.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
I'm going to do something that I've never done before, and that's bring up embryology.
Oh, well, I've converted you.
Well, I think it's...
Goodness.
For once, it's important.
blasphemy.
So in general, visceral pain is perceived from the abdominal region that correlates to the embryonic somatic segment, right? So your foregut, midgut, hindgut. So what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to test Matt and see how good his embryology knowledge here. So foregut structures, Matt. Can you name some foregut structures?
Well, let's just say the foregut basically starts at the mouth and ends at the point at where the liver came out. So where you have the bile duct that enters the duodenum is the end of the foregut. So all the structures from that point. So you would have esophagus, stomach, first two parts of the duodenum, probably pancreas, you could argue for, liver, gallbladder,
okay,
foregut.
So that's your foregut. And so these are usually associated with upper abdominal pain.
And is that accurate, Dinesh, generally?
Yeah. So midgut. Okay, what organs would you find from the midgut?
So that's all the GI organs from that, the bile duct point onwards, all the way to your transverse colon, splenic flexure, basically. So that will give you all small bowel.
Yep.
So that will give you the rest of the duodenum. So parts 3, 4.
Yeah.
And then you go into jejunum, all of ileum, cecum.
So the proximal colon.
Cecum, appendix.
Yep.
Ascending colon, 2/3 transverse colon.
Okay. And this is usually associated with periumbilical pain.
Yeah. Is that still?
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, until probably involves the peritoneum, right?
Mm.
And then finally, the hindgut structures.
So the last third of the transverse colon, all the descending colon, sigmoid, and the proximal 2/3 of the rectum.
What about the genitourinary tract? Would that be part of it?
Well, that branches, all that gets herniated off. Not herniated off, but just there's a septum that goes down and separates the urinary from the bowel.
Yep.
And that's, otherwise it was a cloaca.
And so this is usually associated with lower abdominal pain. So we've got that foregut, upper abdominal pain, midgut, periumbilical pain, and hindgut, lower abdominal pain. And that's the last time I'll ever talk about embryology. But no, I think it is quite helpful in this case.
So I think what you're highlighting there is all the foregut structures, if they don't become referred, could potentially present with kind of upper epigastric-ish pain. The midgut structures, like small bowel, will present right around your belly button, and then your colon and so forth would present lower down.
Yeah.
If you're not involved in kind of referred. So a good example, and again, Dinesh, correct me if I'm wrong, but appendix, that's midgut. So initially, appendicitis might be around the umbilicus, but as it gets bigger and more inflamed and may start to spill inflammatory mediators into the peritoneum, it becomes much more localized where the appendix actually is, and so then the pain would be where?
Mm-hmm. It'd be in the right, well, it'd be in the right lower quadrant, yeah. And when you press on it, it's specifically a point called McBurney's point, which is 2/3 of the way from your umbilicus to your anterior superior iliac spine.
Right.
Yeah.
And you get, is it rebound pain?
Well, that depends. So you might just press and you might get tenderness when you palpate it. You can get rebound tenderness. You can also get percussion tenderness. So you put your palm down on the abdomen and tap it.
Yeah.
And people can get tenderness from that. You can also get Rolfing's sign, where you press the contralateral side of the abdomen and they feel pain there.
Oh, so why is that?
That's a good question.
Is that just because you're shifting things around? And it...
I honestly can't remember the mechanism of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the signs. And you can get things like the psoas sign, where you
hip flex,
hip extend.
Oh, extend.
Yeah,
okay.
And then it's more so if it's a retrocecal appendix as well. I think
so. Sitting behind the cecum.
Yeah, and that just irritates the psoas. Irritates it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in here with the abdominal pain in the presentation is that, like you said in the beginning, is that it's what determines the way you look at this and the way you then approach your next couple of steps, which we'll talk about in a sec, has to do with, you know, the demographic of the individual. So male versus female and age. Is there anything else that you'll take into consideration?
Yeah. So those basic things are really important because it's going to shape the way you think about it and the things that you're going to put on your list in your head.
So, right. Okay, so that's a good point. So you would have, whether it's conscious or unconscious, some algorithm for abdominal pain sitting in your head in which you are plugging in the variables and you'll spit out what you'll likely think would be what's going on.
Exactly.
And so is there any way that consciously, I know you probably do it quite easily subconsciously, but consciously, could you break it down predominantly with male versus female, what it would most likely be, and age groups, what it would most likely be? Or do you really have like a top three differential and then you then send off for imaging? Or so what's the process there?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about medicine is that there are things that you don't want to miss. So there are things that might be remote, but you don't want to miss because they can be life-threatening.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, in a young lad, it could be testicular torsion that you don't want to miss. Appendicitis is probably something you don't want to miss in case it progresses and becomes bad.
And so with that spectrum, sorry to interrupt, with that spectrum, let's say something that's fairly minor, it's not going to kill them, to something serious that could kill them if you don't pick it up, to life-threatening, if you don't find it now, they're going to be dead.
Yeah.
Does that spectrum present with worse pain? So it's like the most can. Life-threatening going to be the worst?
Yeah, it can. And the patient can be very sick. You know, they can be pale, they can be sweating, they can be
okay.
Their vital signs, you know, their blood pressure's low, their
right.
Febrile, tachycardic, that sort of thing. But, you know, so you have a list of things. So in a young lady, you don't want to miss an ectopic pregnancy,
yes.
For example, or a pregnancy.
Yeah.
Whereas in a middle-aged woman that might come in with epigastric pain, you don't want... So this is another point on this topic is you can get abdominal pain with extra abdominal causes.
Yes.
So say you get a middle-aged woman with epigastric pain, one of the things you might want to rule out is a myocardial infarction or a heart attack. Mm. Okay. So you have all these differentials that you start off with, but then you start to talk about the pain itself. And, you know, if some of the good clinicians, a lot of the time they can get a really good idea of what's going on just with a good history. So there are different mnemonics and systems that people use to get a history. Some of them, you know, there's PQRST, there's Socrates. The way I do it in my head is I talk about where the pain is and then I talk about the nature of it. So I say, you know, sometimes I say point out where the pain is for me.
Okay.
And I say, what does it feel like? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it burning?
Okay.
Describe it to me.
So what would be distinguishing there? So if it's a dull, diffuse pain, what are you thinking versus a sharp, stabbing pain?
So that's still, I think you almost need a bit more history.
Okay.
Still,
yeah, so that information needs to be plugged in with other variables, age, sex, and...
So from that point, you can't go diffuse, kind of gnawing pains, more likely to be visceral versus sharp, stabbing, more localizes, more...
Yeah. So you kind somatic. Of... I mean, you have two bits of the puzzles already. So you've asked about the nature of the pain.
Yeah.
Sorry, you asked about where it is, then you asked about the nature of it, which is what we just did. And then you ask a few other questions as well. So you ask when it came on.
Okay.
So when did it come on? Did it come on suddenly or did it come on gradually over a period of time? So, you know, if it's sudden onset pain, then you might start thinking about other things. So that leads to the next question, which is how bad is the pain? And you generally say, you know, if 10 was the worst pain that you ever had in your life and 1 is nothing, can you rate it for me? So you ask that. And then you say, has the pain got better at all? Has it gone away or is it still there? Then you ask whether anything aggravates it. Does it get worse when you move? Does it get worse when you cough? Does it get worse when you talk? Does anything... So, and then sometimes you can ask things like, you know, oh, they say it feels better when I hunch over or it feels better when I'm not moving. Then you can ask, you know, what else makes it better? Has your pain relief made it better? Has vomiting made it better? Has pooing made it better? And then you ask for other symptoms that are going on at the same time. So that's important.
Yes.
Have you had any vomiting? Are you nauseous? Have you had fevers? Have you had diarrheas? Are you constipated? What's your appetite been like? So all those questions are important as well.
So it's very complex abdominal pain, isn't it?
Exactly. And you need to ask all these questions to get an idea of what might be happening. Then you need to also ask about their medical history.
Yeah.
Have they had surgeries before? You know,
So I assume bariatric surgery would be a huge factor. If they said, I've had bariatric surgery before, maybe you're thinking that there's some adhesion or some issue in regards... Or
any intra-abdominal surgery might lead to that sort of thing, you know? So are they taking any medications? If they're taking...
Like NSAIDs or something?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So if these people are taking NSAIDs chronically... you might start to think, oh, this guy has epigastric pain. He's been taking NSAIDs for a long period of time. Does he have a perforated ulcer or just gastritis?
Is that common?
It is actually, NSAID-induced gastritis or NSAID-induced ulcers.
Yeah.
Perforations are less common.
And so with stomach issues like mm-hmm. that, what would likely make it better for them? Would it be an antacid, or would it be after eating or before eating?
So, yeah, potentially. You mean symptomatically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, potentially eating could make it better. Sometimes, you know, but if it's progressed to a point where they, you know, it's severe, they just come in and say it's been hurting for ages nothing's making it better.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they can have bleeding ulcers that need urgent. So that's where the rest of the history comes in. Are your stools black?
Mm.
You know? So all these questions help build the picture. Of a thousand different things.
Of course.
Yeah.
God.
But they're asking the right questions. Really important.
So when it comes to a diagnosis like GERD, for example, is that a diagnosis of exclusion? Like you do a whole bunch of different workups, you do a bunch of different tests, and you don't find anything. Is that when you go, look, it's just reflux? Yeah, I mean, are there often diagnoses you come to at the end of seeing somebody where you basically just go, look, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. Yeah. It must then be this. There's no test you can do to determine it.
Yeah.
Is that common for abdominal pain?
Yeah, and it could be a case of just excluding the serious things. And
yeah.
You say, look, and, you know, in the emergency department, you have to do that a lot of the time. You say, look, you're not dying right now, and you're not going to die, but you need to go back to your GP and follow up X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. So is idiopathic pain, you know, pain of what we think is of an unknown cause, is that a common presentation ED? At the end of it, you go, look, I have no idea what's actually causing this abdominal pain. Is that common?
Chronic pain is a huge issue, and the way it's managed also is a huge issue. And yeah, you certainly get, you know, pain where you can't find any cause. Yeah. You know, it's not extremely common, but it's definitely there. We always find presentations with no cause. Yeah.
Yeah. God. So if we go back to the case study, can you just highlight some important points? Maybe highlight
so his age. So he's male. He's 64.
Yeah.
He's got diffuse pain, but it still comes in waves.
Mm-hmm.
He's got distension of his abdomen, and he's been constipated for some time.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if we want to kind of go through this as you would approach it. So, let's just... I know you did mention the PQRST, which is your mnemonic. So, just for the listeners so they know what that all means. So, the P is for provoking factors, things that make... Is that right? Things making things worse?
Yeah, I actually don't use PQRST.
Okay.
But,
you're a Socrates man.
I have
Socrates.
I have my own. I have my own money, which is which I learnt in med school in 2008. But I think people use Socrates a lot more now.
Okay.
But for this guy, if we're talking about this guy specifically,
I guess it's difficult because we can't exactly ask questions here.
Exactly.
You just got a bit of information.
But you know the fact that he's 64 and the information that we do have is quite helpful.
Okay.
So, he hasn't pooed for a long time. He's been constipated. So, that's a key, bit of information. And he said the abdomen's distended. He said that the pain's generalized, but also tender in the left lower quadrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the pain does, even though it's diffuse and ongoing, it does come in intermittent waves.
Yeah. So that kind of gives us a bit of an idea of what you might be looking for. So the top of the things on your list could be obstruction.
Okay.
You could potentially also think about diverticulitis.
Right.
In that age group.
And so without knowing if it's obstructed, I mean, like you can't see through them. So how would you confirm that?
Whether they're obstructed.
Yeah.
You do an erect abdominal x-ray.
Okay, so why would you do a say an x-ray over a CT?
You can certainly do a CT, but an erect abdominal x-ray is a really quick way to see if they're obstructed. So you'll see distended bowels.
Okay.
You'll see air fluid levels right. from things sitting there.
So, and why erect? Why get them to stand up? If they're in pain and they want yep. to lay down, why would you get
so,
them to...
Yeah, it's so you can see the air fluid levels if they're there.
So does that just yeah. mean air also, will be sitting higher up? And if they were to have...
Yeah, so you'll actually see fluid. So you'll see lines of fluid sitting okay. through the bowel.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, if you look at a glass with fluid in it, mm. you can see the level of the fluid.
Yeah, okay.
And so you'll see that.
Oh, wow.
You'll see air fluid levels. So you'll see fluid levels throughout your bowel.
Wow.
Another...
Would that take time? Like, do you have to stand them up for 5 minutes?
No. No, so it's super quick. The other useful wow. thing about that, an erect abdominal x-ray, is also you can see if there's a perforation because you'll see air under the diaphragm.
Because that will just yeah. that will just go up to the top of that.
Obviously, yeah. it's going to raise yeah. up. And...
If you get the diaphragm as well, you can sometimes see it.
Yeah.
So you can do erect chest x-ray or erect abdominal x-ray. So you can see both of those things. And so that's it. CT takes time and it's, you know, more costly.
Mm.
But if you do an abdominal x-ray, it takes, you know, quick. Seconds. Yeah. And you'll have an answer straight away.
And you could potentially do it at the bedside too, right?
You could if you wanted to.
There's portal yeah. ones. Yeah.
But that would be, they usually don't do them erect, I don't think.
Okay, right. And I guess there's the radiation issue as well with CT, right? It's a lot more.
Exactly.
Radiation.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah, an erect abdominal x-ray will give you an answer pretty quick. So if there's no suspicion of obstruction in that, it's much less likely that they're actually obstructed.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm interested in abdominal aneurysm.
Yeah.
So abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Yeah.
How does that present? I would assume that is that more common in the elderly?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how would that present?
Is that one of your big red flags?
Yeah. So it definitely is a big red flag. And abdominal aneurysm, so if it's when they'll present to the ED, sadly, is when they either rupture or something catastrophic happens
yeah. to it. So often too late.
Yeah. So there can be an occult asymptomatic aneurysm sitting there and then, you know, it either ruptures or something happens.
So it's usually asymptomatic up until it's too late.
It certainly can be.
Wow. So they
yeah.
can present to you it's just ruptured or it's yeah. ruptured.
It could.
I would have thought that you got seconds, you'd be dead in seconds. I just thought you'd bleed out.
It depends on the extent of it.
Wow.
So...
Because it's a big vessel, right?
It depends on the type of aneurysm, right? I mean, I would assume that you can have different types... Oh, I could be wrong. Different types of aneurysms occurring in the abdomen, depending on the type of aneurysm, whether it's a berry or whether it's... do you know what I mean? Or is once the abdominal aorta is burst, it's going to bleed pretty quick regardless?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends to the extent of how much, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it can be catastrophic and you can certainly die very quickly from it.
Mm.
Or you can become very hemodynamically unstable. You can pass out and come in with it.
Mm.
Yeah, or you could come in and say, look, it hurts like hell and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if it's significant... and it ruptures, it can be fatal. If it grows big enough, people can feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If it grows big enough, you can see it pulsate in an abdomen sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. And you can actually palpate it as well.
And auscultate it? Can you hear it?
Generally not.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if it grows to the point where it's really uncomfortable and pain-causing. Sometimes people just get diagnosed.
Yeah.
And so because that's a structure that's sitting right at the back of the abdominal wall, is that there's the pain usually at the back? Like, would they have back pain more so with it? Or
yeah,
again, it's just too varied?
Yeah, with aortic dissections, you can sometimes get, you know, that classically they describe it as being tearing pain that you feel between your scapulae.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's like quite painful. Yeah.
And so with a AAA, how typically would you diagnose? Would it be with an image again?
With the AAA, yep, you'd probably want a contrast CT to really see it.
So if that was on your differential, you would do a CT and then put some contrast in. And then that's like a straight up surgery kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's a vascular surgery or interventional radiology procedure. Yeah, so, you know, it depends on the nature of it, obviously, and the clinical state of it.
Yeah.
But you can just go in through the femoral artery and deploy a device.
Wow. Like a stent or something.
Yeah.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And what? So while we're just talking about flag, the red, big red flag, what are the other ones that would be always in the back of your mind just to make sure that you've covered?
Yeah. Perforation is one. Obstruction is one.
And are the perforations usually due to pharmacological mismanagement?
Probably, you know, perforation can happen for a bunch of reasons. So you could have a perforated peptic ulcer. Mm. You could have diverticula that... You know, you can get perforated.
So how do you determine somebody has, if somebody has an acute bout of diverticulitis?
Yeah.
How do you determine that? Is that another diagnosis of exclusion?
Look, classically, they'll say, I've got pain, and they'll point to the left lower quadrant.
Yeah.
They'll be tender in the left lower quadrant.
Yeah.
So we're looking at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes exquisitely, there might be febrile.
Yeah.
When you do bloods, they might have an elevated white cell count or a CRP. So all those kind of things. And then they usually tend to be middle-aged or above.
Yeah.
Although, you know, people have been known to get it in their 30s.
Yeah.
So that would kind of give you an idea.
And then we just smash them with antibiotics?
Yep. Yeah, so the mainstay of treatment...
But again, to be diagnosed with that, do they need a colonoscopy?
Or you can do a CT, contrast CT.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did this last night.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then it's triple antibiotics. So you can do gentamicin, ampicillin, and metronidazole. Yeah.
Wow.
So is the contrast this time they're drinking it?
Or? You know, I'd have to check the protocol for that. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's amazing, because we all have diverticuli, and diverticulitis being some stuff, primarily bacteria, getting caught up and irritating that diverticuli and producing some sort of inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that would be something that would be ongoing for that individual. They'll come in, they'll get it, and then I'd assume they would be recurring patients.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they would know, once they've had it once, they'd probably come in and go, I've got diverticulitis again.
But yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd suspect it if they've been in with it before. And, but then... so that's definitely one, but there are quite a few other red flag ones. Ectopic pregnancy being one.
Yes.
Especially if it ruptures. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Testicular torsion, like I said, can get referred.
And so why would that be a flag? Is that just... Because you could lose a testicle?
Exactly.
But is it life-threatening?
No, but it can become ischemic.
Right. Yeah.
It can also become ischemic and then gangrenous and infected. And
yeah, right, like fair enough, yeah.
You don't want to lose a testicle.
No.
You do not.
No, you
doesn't
do not.
Doesn't need to be said.
I might just add there, because I didn't say it earlier, that ischemic... would add to the visceral pain as well. So if you have ischemia to a big enough area, that is quite painful as well.
That's a really good point. So you can get ischemic gut, which is, you know, which is something you need to think about.
Yeah.
So what would be causing ischemic gut?
So you can have emboli thrown off into it.
Yeah. So that's a vascular issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus, say, like if you have torsion, it's twisted around itself. Is that called vulva?
Oh, sorry, we're talking about the testicle, are we?
Oh, no. Bowel. Or just ischemic pain to viscera.
Yeah.
Is a mechanism of pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be quite significant pain as well. Yeah.
So how do you determine that? How do you determine ischemic bowel? Would there be an image for that?
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be a difficult one to get to sometimes.
Yeah.
Unless they've had risk factors for it.
One part of the bowel that's most commonly affected for ischemia, or can it be pretty much anywhere?
There is one part that's more commonly affected than the other. I just can't remember it off the top of my head.
Right.
Yeah. But there is one area that's more vulnerable from memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's certainly something that can happen.
Telescopic bowel. Is that common? Do you ever see somebody with telescopic
intersusception?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more common.
I say telescopic because I can't say intersusception.
I've never heard telescopic.
Yeah.
You've never heard telescopic?
But that's essentially what happens. The bowel telescopes into itself.
Is that more children? Is that children and potentially the elderly?
Potentially the elderly, yeah. Wow. But yes, children.
Is that more congenital? They're kind of born with it?
It's not congenital.
Okay.
But kids can get it. Mm. And it can just, you know, so they can have periods where they're quite irritable, and then it can untelescope when they're, and then they're comfortable, and then it can re-telescope.
So is it an issue with the musculature of the bowel? Is there some issue in sending the signal and the musculature, the mitral plexus potentially tells it to suck itself in, or...
From memory, I'd have to refresh my memory about this one. I think it has to do with the surrounding lymph nodes or something like that being enlarged. But again, I honestly can't remember. Yeah, it can happen.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon.
Yeah.
But it's something that you need to look out for. And when it happens, you just insufflate it back. So you just literally blow air up someone's butt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then...
So is that usually large bowel where it's happening?
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
From memory.
Is that the only time that is the mode of treatment? is there any other cases in which you're like, we need air up the butt stat?
When you're trying to suck up to someone else.
That's when you're sucking the air out of the butt.
That's true. But, you know, with a lot of these things in the elderly... you need to make sure that there's no malignant cause going on as well. You know, so...
Because I'd assume elderly would come in and... I'd assume they would put up with a fair bit of pain for a fair bit of time. And when they present... I could be wrong again, but when they present, is it something that you know, this, I've had this pain for 4 months now. It's only now just getting worse. Is that common for that to happen with the elderly?
It can be, but... You know, a lot of the times for someone to come into the ED, it has to be fairly significant, generally. Although that's not always the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, with obstruction, with all these things, you know, with them, you definitely need to think about malignancy.
Okay.
As you know, you just got to be careful.
Yeah. As the primary cause of obstruction.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to finish with, Matty?
No, I think we've been pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. It's a hard one, but I think...
It is a hard one to kind of keep concise.
Yeah.
You can kind of go anywhere with it.
Exactly. You can go to town with
yeah.
different... I mean, we could probably talk for sessions and sessions about different pathologies and different causes of abdominal pain, but I think the important thing to note is that there are many causes of abdominal pain, and you can usually try and... hone it down with good history.
Yeah, that's kind of what's highlighted to me today is that for a common presentation, I mean, we've all had abdominal pain. For a common presentation, having a good history and having some good questions asked, you could almost ascertain a diagnosis with just that. From what you said, you know, talking about where is it? Is it acute? Is it chronic? What makes it worse? What makes it better? Is it a sharp pain? Is it a stabbing pain? Is it diffuse pain? Does it radiate? Is it local? Is it one area? Are there symptoms along with it? You know, how long has it been around for? There's a lot of questions in there, and you can get so much information. And like you said, how old are they? Male versus
female.
The
other demographic.
Medical history, surgical history, obstetric history. medications that they're taking. Are you taking opiates? Are you taking NSAIDs?
And I guess
all that stuff.
This is just like after you gather all that information,
yeah,
you're pretty confident about what they have. Obviously, you send them off for whatever scan you think's required. Are you, when it comes to abdominal pain, after you've taken the history, are you like, I don't want you to necessarily quote stats on how correct or incorrect you are, but when it comes to abdominal pain, you're like, yeah, I've pretty much got that. Just
well,
for
I mean,
the patient history.
A lot of the time you can get a decent idea of what might be going on, and then the physical examination is the next bit, you know, so you actually feel the abdomen and, you know, feel where they're tender and what's going on, what their clinical state is. And, you know, that's the basic stuff that'll hopefully get you. And really, lab tests and imaging tests are there to confirm what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could order 1,000 different blood tests or you could order different types of imaging. But you need to have an idea of where you're going.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, my liege.
Ha!
Thank you.
Well, is it, don't you want to know the outcome of this case study?
No. All right, yeah, go on. What is it?
So it's a large bowel obstruction. Like you correctly said, and it was called, well, I've got the stats here. 65% of large bowel obstruction is caused by tumors. Would you agree with that from what you've seen?
Probably. Yeah. Possibly.
About 20
in the age group, I'll just share.
About 20% from diverticulitis, 5% from volvulus. There's other things like ulcerative colitis and hernia. So in his case, he had a hernia, a type of hernia that I've never heard of. And that's
what was the type of hernia?
I had to look it back up.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't one, you know, the common ones like the inguinals or the umbilicals. It was a strange one. So in this case, if there was a large bowel obstruction and you confirmed it, and let's say the whole large bowel is just full of poo, what do you do? Do you just evacuate it, or do you have to go into surgery, or?
Again, it's going to depend on what the cause is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be cause dependent.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess you just call the gastro team.
Oh, general surgery probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any final comments?
Not from me.
No. Well, thanks. Thanks again, guys.
Thank
Always
you for
fun.
In.
Yeah. So we're going to try to have Dinesh on about every month, and we're probably, since he's the ED man. We're going to try and go through the most common presentations into ED, such as abdominal pain.
That's right.
That sounds good.
Perfect.
Look forward to it.
He'll probably have another acronym behind his name next month.
We'll get some other award that puts us all to shame.
No.
Everyone, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Dr. I always forget.
Mickey Todd.
Dr. Mickey Todd, I think I am. And Dr. Bartox. Do you have Twitter, Dinesh?
I don't have any social media except LinkedIn.
Smart. Yeah. Smart man. That's why I couldn't find you on Twitter when I was trying to congratulate you. We've also got a Facebook page, Dr. Matt, Dr. Mike's Medical Podcast. I've just made an Instagram account where I put up 3 to 5 minute videos talking about anatomy, physiology, things like that. It's going pretty well. If you want to view it, that's at Dr. Mike Todorovic, Dr. being just DR, Mike Todorovic. And apart from that, give us a nice 5-star rating on iTunes. If you don't like us, don't listen to us and don't give us a shitty rating. Thanks, everyone.
And Dr. Dinesh is off to bed.
Yes.
Good night, Dinesh.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, team.
See ya.
That was
thanks,
fun.
Mate.
Ah, that was
good. That was a really good one. It got a bit muddy at one point. But it is muddy.
It's muddy. Yeah, it's broad. Yeah.
But I think we covered. I think we covered really well.
Highlight it.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.